Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, parents across the state this week say they're faced with an impossible choice. Either prepare to send their child back to a brick-and-mortar school or try to see that they're educated at home to protect them from coronavirus. Now, they're pondering all this as a third of Florida's kids who have been tested for COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic have turned up positive. Yeah, almost 17,000 kids have now been diagnosed with the virus in Florida, most of them school-aged children, according to data from the State Department of Health.
So the issue of kids and COVID-19 is getting a lot more attention lately as the state continues experiencing a surge of infections and a new school year quickly approaches. On Friday, as we're live here across the state of Florida reporting over 11,000 new cases in the past day. 14% of those tested were positive, and 128 people died.
So we want to hear from you, Florida, wherever you are in the state, teachers, parents, and students. Are you looking forward to returning to class, or would you rather start the school year online? What are your thoughts about preparing for school in the midst of a pandemic? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800 across the state. Tweets come in to @FloridaRoundup.
Let's check in with the state of school planning across Florida. Palm Beach County parents, students, and teachers know how school will reopen in the weeks ahead. They just don't know exactly when. The county is the largest yet to make it official that the new school year will start online, not inside classrooms. Wilkin Brutus is the Palm Beach County reporter at WLRN. Wilkin, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. What led to the school board in Palm Beach County to unanimously okay starting school, but only doing it online?
The current spike of COVID-19 and the more than 10% positivity rate certainly forced the school board to start the academic year with distance learning. Dr. Lena Alonzo, who sits on the district's health advisory committee, suggested school campuses remain closed. So the chairman of the board, Frank Barbary, and other board members were pretty adamant about following her lead.
And when she talked about schools remaining closed, she means the school buildings, not that they don't offer online instruction, correct?
Yes, she meant the actual physical campuses.
Why did the school board in Palm Beach County not make a decision about when to start school, though?
Yeah, so school was pretty much slated to begin August 10th, but it was delayed after board member Barbara McQuinn proposed an amendment to delay school reopening to allow teachers, parents, and students more time to make arrangements. And so several dates were somewhat tossed around, including one in September, but starting school at a later date has created potential issues with pay gaps for thousands of employees. So district leaders are hashing out possible negotiations with workers and union leaders.
So could the district decide to delay classes until after Labor Day, for instance?
I'm not quite sure. District leaders will meet again July 22nd to see what impact a later date could have on everything.
So that's going to be next week, for that matter. How long could classes be online in Palm Beach County? How frequently are they going to reassess this idea?
So Superintendent Donald Fennoy and his team crafted a 52-page distance learning plan. And from what I gathered from that sort of 10-hour marathon of a meeting, it seems like classes will be online for the foreseeable future. And one of several quotes really stood out for me. Fennoy said, quote, "Everything we're doing right now is speculation because we cannot control COVID."
You mentioned the long meeting. Yeah, 10 hours for that school board meeting. We've seen a lot of multi-hour meetings over the past couple of days for school boards across the state. 70,000 people live streamed the Palm Beach County School Board meeting this week. Describe the tone and the debate that you witnessed.
I thought the virtual school board meeting presented a comprehensive look into their decision-making process. And they seemed quite transparent and emphasized many scenarios. There were so many working pieces involved. But the public comment was quite polarizing. From Lake Worth to Belgrade, the tone was sad, filled with confusion and fear. There were more than 180 comments, many of whom supported distance learning, while many despised it. a father of two boys with autism, a wife with a five-year-old son, each expressing, you know, the sort of toll it would take on their family and finances if campuses were closed. So a lot of broad support, but also a lot of broad disagreements about it.
In South Florida, Palm Beach is perhaps further out in making a decision. It has decided it will start online. Just a question of when remains undecided. What about the status of schools in Broward and Miami-Dade counties?
Yeah, so the Broward County School Board, I believe, is still working on reopening plans. Their superintendent, Robert Runcie, recommended that schools begin the year online only. And the Miami-Dade County Public Schools are working on several criterias before they can open schools on August 24th. But one criteria requires that their county to have a sustained COVID-19 positivity rate of less than 10%. But right now it's sitting at 30%. So to your point, I believe most of South Florida may start school online.
5 seconds.
Wilkin Brutus is the Palm Beach County reporter for WLRN. Thanks, Wilkin.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's check in on North Florida now with Sky LeBron, reporter for WJCT in Jacksonville. Sky, you know, the Duval County School Board this week voted to postpone approving its superintendent's back-to-school plan. Why is that?
Yeah, so Superintendent Green said she was going to come up with a revised version of the plan on July 23rd, so next week, mainly because the school board doesn't really know if a few weeks from now the local areas will be healthy enough for in-person classes as cases do continue to rise. The Duval County School Board is actually considering pushing back in-person start dates from August 10th to a couple weeks after that and going with an online-only start and also using that those couple weeks to provide training for teachers and staff to better prepare for those in-person classes.
Right. So, and they want more time to plan, too, right? This is just such an unprecedented situation. They need time.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, there's a lot of teachers that are they're just worried about how they're going to be able to handle it when they have these hybrid classes, in-person classes, especially. I was hearing a lot from elementary school teachers that are concerned about how do I keep these children with face shields on? How do I keep them with masks on? That's a big concern they have.
That is a question so many teachers have, especially in the younger grades. We will be speaking to a teacher of the year, by the way, later in the hour. And so there's a difference here in Jacksonville, Duval County, when it comes to the elementary grades as opposed to the middle and upper grades. How are they approaching that?
So in the plan, it stated that middle and high school students would go back to in-person classes, but it would be on a hybrid basis. For elementary schools, Diana Green said that this option wasn't really needed because they felt like they can provide proper social distancing environments. They're also providing them face shields. That's going to be a requirement. The masks aren't a requirement, according to the most recent plan, but the face shields are going to be provided to all elementary school students. Some teachers I talked to earlier, like I said, are really concerned about that feature and are concerned in general about starting with in-person classes for a lot of elementary school students with small classrooms.
And amidst all of this, of course, the city is planning for the Republican National Convention to come to town at the end of August. There have been calls to push back the start of school until after that event comes and goes. There's a lot of worry about these two things at the same time.
Exactly. That's the big factor here in Jacksonville, because if you want to start school later, you want to push it back from August 10th to August 24th, for example, you're starting right around the time of the RNC when thousands of people are expected to come to town. Even if the event is scaled down, there's still going to be thousands here. So they're considering how that environment combined with the start of school might cause some safety concerns. And I guess we'll be finding out more about that next week.
Other districts are doing slightly different planning. Quickly, we want to note St. John's County is still working on their plan, and they have twice rejected a mask mandate, by the way, for the county, although there is one in Duval County. So there's some differences amongst different districts.
Exactly. Just south of us in St. John's County, there's been a call by the school board to also push back the school start date 2 weeks. It's interesting there in that county because today is actually the deadline for parents to pick what option they want.
What option they want.
Yeah.
Sky LeBron, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amy Green is a reporter at WMFE in Orlando. Let's find out how Central Florida is dealing with the uncertainty of COVID-19. and the approaching beginning of the school year. Amy, welcome back to the Roundup. The Orange County School Board called for a special meeting this morning on this Friday to talk about reopening schools. Any decisions yet?
That's right. The Orange County School Board is meeting this morning after tabling discussion late Tuesday when they began experiencing some technical problems, and so they decided to just come back and pick up the discussion again this morning. And before the board is a third option for starting the school year. It's called Launch Ed at Home, and it is an option that initially would have parents homeschooling children with help from teachers, of course, and then hopefully as conditions improve, teachers could choose to send their kids to school a couple times a week, according to their preferences. This option would allow students to remain enrolled in their school. Students would be assigned to a teacher, and those kinds of things. Already, the school board is presenting parents with two other options, mm-hmm. face-to-face and Orange County Virtual School, which is a franchise of both the Florida Virtual School. It's fully accredited and predates the pandemic.
Sounds like similar to what we're hearing in other school districts, looking at an option of in the schoolhouse, all online, or that middle option, some kind of hybrid combination of some days on the screen at home, and then some days in the classroom. You mentioned some of the technical difficulties during the meeting earlier this week. Were those like technology problems? Was the meeting virtual or in person?
Some school board members were dialing in from home, and they were experiencing technical problems with that. And it was late in the evening, and so they decided to table the discussion and come back today.
What are the health metrics that Orange County is using or will be using to guide its ultimate decision?
Well, right. So really at the crux of the discussion here in Orange County is this state emergency order that is requiring schools to reopen, brick and mortar schools to reopen 5 days a week and offer the full slate of services to all students. In Orange County, there is a lot of opposition to reopening brick and mortar schools. We heard hours of public testimony Tuesday evening, overwhelmingly opposed to reopening schools. A lot of teachers very fearful about that. School board members this morning speaking out strongly against that. However, they are characterizing the situation as one where they feel their hands are tied almost by this emergency order from Education Secretary Richard Corcoran, which is requiring schools to reopen with an exception being a directive from state health officials or local health officials. In Orange County, we're in phase two. Obviously, Florida COVID numbers are going up, and there are a lot of concerns about that. But there's been no health directive in Orange County that would prevent schools from reopening. And so this morning, the discussion is centering around that. And it sounds like what school board members are leaning toward is approving this hybrid option, this innovative option, and putting together a very strong statement for Governor Ron DeSantis opposing
and Amy,
or
when would it begin? Right now, Orlando schools are set to begin August 10th. Is that still the start date?
That also is being discussed, and the discussion is that could be pushed back to August 21st and even as far as August 31st.
Amy Green reporting on the situation of Orange County around the Orlando area for our sister station WMFE. Thanks, Amy.
It's nice to talk with you.
It's 305-995-1800 to call the Florida Roundup. Lane tweets the show, schools should wait until after Labor Day at the very least. As we whip around the state, let's go now to the Tampa-St. Pete area with Jessica Mazaros of WUSF. Hey, Jessica, you know, the State Board of Ed and the governor met in your area this week. What came out of that meeting?
Yeah, so the governor, along with board members and Hillsborough County School Superintendent, were in Dover, and basically it was the majority applauding Richard Corcoran, the Education Commissioner, for his emergency order to mandate that schools offer brick and mortar schooling 5 days of the week. But there was one sole board member, Michael Olnick, who was questioning the emergency order. He said that, the commissioner should have brought this to the board first to have a discussion, should have heard from the public. And, you know, he was saying that the board makes suggestions and helps, doesn't make mandates like this. And he believes that, you know, and what was being said a lot was the word flexible was being used a lot, that this was created to give a flexible option to parents. But Olnick argued that if it was going to be flexible, that there would not be a mandate for 5 days a week. Hmm. And he requested for that to be rescinded, and Education Commissioner Corcoran said that that was not going to happen, and that part of the flexibility does come from offering this to parents who would wish to have the five-day option.
And there were protesters outside demanding these kinds of changes. What was that dynamic like?
So basically police, well, law enforcement didn't allow there was about 40 protesters to be directly in front of the school. It was Strawberry Crest High School in Dover, and they were about across the street, and it was parents, teachers, faculty, students, and even community members, not even, you know, relating to schools, just were there in support. And they were saying that they would like schools to open only after 14 days straight of no new cases in the county. And I'm hearing from I spoke with the teacher, I spoke with a parent in Hillsborough County saying that they are afraid for the children. They're afraid for themselves. The teachers don't feel prepared. And the teacher who I spoke to also said, you know, it was being talked about in the meeting that a part of this reopening is a question. It is a part of an economic question, you know, like if parents can send their kids back to school, they don't have to worry and go to work. And what I'm hearing from this teacher is, we are not babysitters, is what she said. You know, we are educators. And so that's been a part of the discussion as well.
And as teachers weigh in, we want to let people know we'll be talking with an Orange County Teacher of the Year after the break. But first, let me ask you, Jessica, is it right that the Hillsborough County School Board hasn't made up its mind yet, we're hearing, on how and when they'll reopen schools?
Right. So yesterday, our reporter at WUSF, Alicia Cruz, she reported on the Hillsborough County School Board meeting yesterday. And basically, the school board is divided. Some board members want to start in 2021, and others are agreeing to start next month. And basically, the idea that the superintendent, Addison Davis, brought up was to have three options, either face-to-face instruction, e-learning through each school, or the district's own virtual school. But something interesting that did come up in terms of, you know, a safety question, Davis also announced what he was calling a COVID commander, someone to track sanitation supplies and lead contact tracing when a school does in fact have a coronavirus case.
I'm sure that's something other districts will adopt if they haven't already. A COVID commander to try to quell concerns about the spread of coronavirus in schools. And, you know, it's fascinating to get this whip around the state as we see how different districts are dealing with this. Hearing that 70,000 people, for example, logged on to watch the Palm Beach School Board meeting, simply extraordinary. I think that shows the level of interest people have in how this is going to be accomplished around the state. So thanks to everyone who hopped on the line with us. And thank you, Jessica Mazaros of WUSF, for your coverage.
Thank you.
We'll be right back as we speak with one Teacher of the Year from Orange County and get his thoughts on back to school. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. 305-995-1800 to give us a call. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. For some, the school year less than 1 month away, at least on the official published calendar. But a lot of school districts are reconsidering that start date and certainly debating how schools can start safely during a pandemic. We want to hear from teachers, parents, students. How do you want your school to reopen in the weeks ahead. Are you confident in the public health protocols to stay safe if classrooms are opened up? What about cafeterias, band rooms, athletic practices? What about just even in the hallways? Are you comfortable with online learning if the infection rates remain high? 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Alex Ingram is a teacher at Darnell Cookman School of the Medical Arts in Jacksonville.
I mean, as the plan stands right now, we are putting teachers, children, parents, caretakers in significant danger.
That's what we're hearing from lots of teachers out there. Cafeteria workers, janitors, other school staff. There are so many people that work in and around our school system. We want to hear from you, and you can send your tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Well, Rob Pascal is the Orange County Public Schools Teacher of the Year for 2019-2020, and he's also a finalist for their 2021 Florida Teacher of the Year, and he's on the line. Hey, Rob, congratulations on all your great work with students in the classroom, and thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
I'm really curious to get your thoughts about back to school. You've said that you'd like a solution that works for all families, that you don't think all distance learning or all in-person classrooms will work. What would you like to see done in Orange County schools?
Thank you. As Amy Green was sharing, Orange County Public Schools School Board is meeting again right now after two marathon meetings last Tuesday and then Tuesday earlier this week. It seems that we're looking to propose a third option in addition to face-to-face, a brick-and-mortar option, and the online version, an innovative option that would allow students to remain connected to each other and to their teachers, a launch ed option that could be broadened to allow parents to send their children to school for select days and then to be at home for select days as well. In my opinion, I think offering as many options as possible to families, community members, teachers, students, is going to be our best option. It's going to allow fluidity. It's going to allow teachers and families to make the choices that they feel comfortable with.
Right. Different families have different needs and concerns. Now, as for you yourself, will you be going back into the classroom 5 days a week?
I will. Once a plan has been finalized for Orange County Public Schools, they will be asking parents and teachers, families, community members, once again, what would you be choosing? And then they'll make decisions from there. One of the survey questions I'm anticipating will be asking me, Rob, would you be coming to the brick and mortar school 5 days a week, or would you like to be one that's going to be doing online learning only?
Let's go to your phone calls here, talking about the return to schools for Florida students, teachers, parents, janitors, faculty, and staff. Natalie in Tampa, you are up on line four. Go ahead, Natalie. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I am the mom of a rising fifth grader here in Hillsborough County, and my son has asthma. So he decided before the end of e-learning in the spring that he did not want to go back. But I encouraged him to wait. You know, let's look and see what happens closer to the fall. Meanwhile, I've started getting things ready. I started ordering a dry erase board, you know, a rolling cart for our home to put his books and stuff on, got a decent chair for him to sit in, realizing that he likely would be in e-learning. I'm going to be home for the rest of the year. I'm very grateful that I can work from home, and I just don't feel comfortable sending him back. So once I realized that, I said, you know what, let's start putting things in place so that he can have a say in what his school space looks like, so it's more welcoming. So we have positive messages, we have the thought for the day, you know, all those types of things. It's just not worth the risk to me, even with him being in a mask, to that, and I just weren't willing to take that chance. So,
Natalie, let me bring Rob into this. Rob is a professional trained school teacher. What kind of advice would you have for Natalie, the parent turned teacher who has decided to homeschool her rising fifth grader?
Natalie, the first thing I'd like to do is to commend you on asking your son's input. As a rising fifth grade, I'm a fifth grade teacher that we ended our year very differently. So asking your child their input on their decision and then coming to consensus on that decision as a family is going to help your son feel much more comfortable about the decision that has been made. It sounds like Hillsborough County, same with Orange County, is still in the process of working out all of the plans.
Yes, we are, I know, unfortunately.
We're just as anxious here in Orange County. I know in Orange County, we will be presenting parents and families and students with options that you could change to a different model halfway through the year. So whatever model that you commit to for the first semester, once things have winded down, or if things have increased or gotten worse, that you could change your decision for the second semester of the year.
Correct. It's the same way here. The one thing that encourages me most about what this new e-learning model looks like is, you know, the spring was incredibly painful for everybody. And I recommended, I don't know if Superintendent Davis, you know, read my messages, but I recommended that in the fall, you know, students are coming back and they potentially won't know everybody in their class if they're in e-learning. So I said, no, whatever we can do to try to make it more of a classroom setting, and I strongly encourage live instruction for math and science. You know, I've been out of school for a while, so I have to go back and relearn, you know, new math and the way that it should be taught. For division or other things was stressful to everybody in my household. So I'm encouraged that there will be more live instruction daily. I don't know what subjects those will cover, but I really hope that at least math is one of them. And then the way I see it, if everybody can't be in place for that live instruction, it can be recorded so that for the subjects that are most troublesome, most for either parents or students, they have access to it. They can go back and watch the recordings later, and hopefully that would enhance the learning process moving forward.
Mm. Natalie, all great points. 100%.
Great
points. Best of luck to you and your rising fifth grader. Stay in touch with us throughout the fall, will you, please, Natalie?
Okay.
We'd love to hear how it's going.
You.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Natalie in Tampa here on 305-995-1800.
John tweets the show, "My son struggled terribly with distance learning. At this point, Florida is past the point of reining this thing in. I'd rather my son get a quality education in person than just scrape by online and retain nothing." John, thanks for that. Let's go to Hope. She's in seventh grade. Hey, Hope, how are you? Where do you go to school?
I go to school at Wilson.
Oh, we just lost you. Are you still there? Give us a call back, Hope. It's 305-995-1800. Are you back with us, Hope?
We got her.
Go ahead, Hope.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay, so where do you go to school?
In Hillsborough County.
Okay, so what are your thoughts about going back to class?
So, I think that we should not reopen schools because they're only going to end up closing down, and moving into e-learning was very hard in the spring. And I think if one kid gets it at a school, they're going to have to move into e-learning, and the teachers aren't trained in e-learning, and we're going to lose a lot of important information to the learning.
So you didn't enjoy the e-learning, Hope. It sounds like that did not go well for you and maybe your friends.
Well, it wasn't that e-learning was necessarily super, like, it wasn't that bad. It was just moving into it. It took about 3 weeks to get really settled into it, and that's 3 weeks of time that I missed from school.
And are you a good student?
Yes.
I figured as much. And I'm sure your parents are very proud of you. I believe you play the violin, too. Is that right?
Yes.
So you have a lot that you want to look forward to in the school year. But I want to ask our teacher, Hope, and Hope, stay on the line if you could. I want to ask Rob Pascola, the Orange County Teacher of the Year. There you have some feedback from a student. She's concerned that we're going to open up only to shut down again. And we've certainly heard that concern voiced by a lot of other folks, too. Rob, what do you think?
I agree, Hope. It's a very valid concern. When teachers were asked to pull out the stops and shift to distance learning in the spring, for many of us, it was time that we would have been preparing for state assessments. So it wasn't necessarily an introduction of new material at that time. We were still finishing up a few things, but then also reviewing some things that we had learned throughout the year. So even though it may still be a rocky start in the fall, teachers did have experience. We had a chance to figure out what did work and what didn't work. I agree with you. Even for me, it took about 2 weeks to kind of get into the swing of things, and then the last 7 weeks went much more smoothly. I anticipate it will still take about 2 weeks to get things going before things run smoothly with whatever model, whichever school district is rolling out in the fall.
Rob, for the spring, did you require the students to have their web cameras on during your class?
I did not require that. Many of them wanted to.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a fifth grade teacher, so as Natalie had shared, one of the callers, the moms from Hillsborough County, I really wanted to keep that social and emotional connection between my scholars.
Yeah.
We had lunch conferences together where we actually weren't learning anything. We were just eating lunch together on a video call. We do gamers conferences on Saturdays just so that we can keep that social connection, because that's just as important as the academics of doing the classroom.
Yeah, I've got a rising sixth grader into middle school, and one of the things he shared with me over dinner a few weeks ago, as I'm sure this has dominated every family's dinner time, lunchtime, and breakfast conversation over the past several weeks in Florida, he said to me, "Dad, I'm not sure how I'm going to make new friends in my new school if it's online."
Yeah, we've heard the same thing, and I've got a rising freshman in high school, and this is her first chance to go into a new school building. She wants to meet her new classmates, see her new class spaces, meet her new teachers. This is tough for so many families.
Yeah, well, imagine a rising kindergartner, right? First experience in public school. Alicia is in Gainesville with us now. Alicia, thanks for calling in. Go ahead, you're on the radio.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yes, my son is entering kindergarten, so we are weighing our decisions about what to do. I'm a former school teacher, but I also work in higher education for online learning specifically, so I basically manage master's degree programs online. So we are trying to figure out, in our county, Alachua County, there are three options: brick and mortar, Digital Academy, which is associated with the school, and then eSchool. And so we are working with other parents in our community to try to figure out a sort of co-op idea where we have our kids in small groups where we're comfortable, work together to figure this out. So we're trying to
decide, putting those small groups of kids together physically in a room in a home.
Yes, well, yeah, maybe not in a home. We're not sure about that, where our location is. Maybe a church setting or something like that, but where we can still have the social interaction for these younger kids, but not have, like, we can sort of control how much they're interacting with other people. So that's kind of our idea. We're going to try to work on it.
Alicia, I appreciate you sharing that with us. Alicia from Gainesville here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Rob Paschal, how about that idea? Parents are always big collaborators with teachers and kids and education, but this is a time where it is unprecedented, really, and seeing these kinds of loose coalitions of parents, especially rising kindergartners, as they try to get their kids ready for a school year in a normal year is challenging and full of anxiety. And then add the pandemic on top of that. What do you think of Alicia's idea?
I think this is the time where we need to realize how much we truly value the relationships and the dependence that we have on each other. When it was National Teacher Appreciation Week, the first week in May, I sent certificates to all of my parents thanking them for being a teacher, because that's what they had been doing for the past 2 months. Even in my local community, I'm seeing the same types of chat, the same types of decisions, the same types of thinking of banding together to support each other. Right now, this is a time to capitalize on having parents as a valuable member of the school community.
Rob, we've got to leave it there. We do appreciate your time, and thanks for your work in the classroom. Rob Paschal is the Orange County Public Schools Teacher of the Year in 2019-2020 and a fifth grade teacher.
Well, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has seen his approval ratings drop as the pandemic takes its toll across the state. On Monday, he was heckled during a press conference on the state's COVID response by immigration advocate Thomas Kennedy.
You are an embarrassment. We're getting record-breaking cases every day, and you are doing nothing. You are falsifying information, and you are misleading the public. Over 4,000 people have died, and you are blaming the protesters. You guys have no plan, and you're doing nothing. Shame on you.
As we heard earlier in the hour, the State Board of Education and DeSantis were met with yet more protests this week when they met in Hillsborough County. Despite the ralliers' pleas outside, the state board members said they have no intention of changing Florida's direction for the reopening of schools on schedule. But DeSantis, like governors in other hot spots around the nation where the virus is surging, has seen his popularity plummet. He's also faced allegations that he tried to suppress distressing coronavirus case data, as we just heard from that heckler. And he's been criticized for reopening the state, critics say, too early. A UNF poll shows DeSantis dropped from a skyrocketing 72% approval last October to 51% in April and now 48% in late June. Meantime, Florida's former top coronavirus data scientist filed a whistleblower complaint Thursday against the state health department. She accused that agency of firing her in retaliation for refusing to manipulate data to support the push to reopen the state. The complaint by former agency data manager Rebecca Jones targets the governor directly. She claims health department officials pressured her to misrepresent COVID-19 statistics to make the disease look less prevalent in order to justify reopening the economy in early May. Now, Jones is asked to be returned to her job with back pay and other compensation. The complaint was filed with the Florida Commission on Human Relations. It's confidential, so we haven't seen it, and no comment on it just yet from the state health department. A quick break and still to come.
As we're watching this and watching how the virus progresses, the hot spots really in Florida are the big major metropolitan areas.
That's next.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. It's 305-995-1800 as we continue looking at how the pandemic has affected Florida. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
We are hearing from parents and teachers, even a student. What about hospitals, though? ICU beds are filling up in some parts of the Sunshine State, and hospital workers are increasingly stressed dealing with the load of sick patients.
Yeah, I spoke about it with Justin Senior. He's CEO of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. Justin Senior, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
You know, the latest report from the state's Agency for Healthcare Administration shows that ICUs in at least three Florida counties, Nassau, Okeechobee, and Putnam, are at full bed capacity, and there's only about 16% available around the state on average is what Newsweek is actually reporting. So as you look at these numbers, how concerned are you that we're going to be getting into a very sticky situation here soon in Florida?
Well, it's definitely something that bears watching. I will say that Putnam County, Okeechobee County, and Nassau County are relatively small. For example, Okeechobee and Nassau only have 8 total ICU beds in the county. So they both are small counties that each have a small hospital that does have some ICU beds, and they're at capacity. Nassau patients who are really ill, though, will probably filter in, for example, to the Jacksonville area. Putnam residents would filter into Gainesville to the University of Florida at Shands. So there's definitely some avenues for those people to seek treatment. As we're watching this and watching how the virus progresses, the hotspots really in Florida are the big major metropolitan areas. Right now, South Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, all along the I-4 corridor from Tampa Bay up to Daytona, and now Jacksonville as well, also seeing a surge in cases. So that's definitely something worth watching. There are a lot of methods that a hospital could use, first to free up some capacity for its hospital system, and then potentially to create a bit of capacity temporarily to try to address this. So you know, some hospitals around the state have begun employing some of those methods.
Yeah, we've been hearing a little bit about that, maybe sending some patients home, maybe. What are some of the other methods you're seeing?
Well, the main method that you'd use, is, and there's a big difference here between what's going on in Florida right now and what was happening around the country in New York and including Florida, basically back in March and April, is that everything was shut down in terms of scheduled procedures, cardiac procedures like stents, hip replacements, knee replacements. It was all shut down back in March and April to free up capacity. And even then, New York, their hospitals really started to fill up. Right now, as we've entered this spike in virus cases in Florida, the healthcare economy has been going, right? The healthcare infrastructure and the healthcare system has been fully operational. And those types of procedures, those scheduled procedures, have been ongoing. So the first thing that a hospital might do to try to free up some capacity, both in terms of its staff and in terms of its brick and mortar, would be to draw back on some of those scheduled procedures and postpone them.
Mm-hmm.
They could do it on an inpatient basis, then they could add in and do it on an outpatient basis, then maybe they'd shut down some of their urgent care operations. You can't do that forever because those are medically necessary procedures, but you might be able to get away with it for 4 to 8 weeks before you'd probably have to start putting those procedures back on the schedule. And that frees up staff and frees up space potentially to serve COVID patients.
And as the CEO of the Safety Net Alliance, how important do you think it is that that be done, considering that the incredible strain that's being placed on hospital staffs around Florida right now?
You know, the staff right now is the primary focus, making sure that they are not exhausted, making sure that morale is high, making sure that they feel well supported, and making sure that they have the resources they need to protect themselves and to make sure that they serve the patients at the highest possible level. If staff members started to get infected with the virus, that would knock them offline. Not only would it place them their health in danger, but then it would place the entire community, it would cascade into the entire community's health in danger, because the capacity of the hospital would shrink exponentially when the staff is no longer there to serve the patients. So they've got to protect themselves. I think Carlos Magoya, the CEO of Jackson Memorial, said it really well the other day. They want to take care of their healthcare workers, because the healthcare workers are the ones taking care of the patients. It all flows down from there.
Right. It's so critical. So what are your biggest worries, your biggest concerns right now as you look around the state and you see how different parts of Florida are dealing with this pandemic?
I think that Florida has an excellent emergency operations team. I think that so far Florida has done a very good job of trying to make sure that the capacity is there to handle this. I think that a lot of the additional staff that's been brought in to the state to help relieve healthcare workers down in Miami-Dade, that's been much appreciated, and I think that's going to be a very effective strategy going forward. I think ultimately we're going to find we have enough brick and mortar. That's not going to be the capacity issue. The issue will be making sure that we can protect the staff, making sure that we keep the staff fresh and focused, and providing the best care. And that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's how you get the best outcome.
Just anecdotally, staffers that work in ICUs, hospitals around the state, they will reach out to folks like me and say,
yeah,
look, we're on the precipice here. This is grim. This is tough. They don't want to talk on the record, though, because their administrators, you know, don't approve of that. And so,
well, you know,
that's worrisome.
Every hospital is, you know, I represent 14 systems around the state. I feel like it is an emphasis and a priority of the leadership of these hospitals. I don't know necessarily which ones you're speaking with. I know that it is a priority of all the ones that are members of our organization. I'll tell you, you know, there's a couple of different things going on here in terms of the strain on the staff. One is that you've got patients that have COVID and are symptomatic of COVID. The other is that in the context of reopening, and this wasn't happening back in March and April, you have patients coming in, maybe they were in a car accident and they were tested as a result of being admitted as an inpatient. It turns out they're COVID positive. They're not in the hospital being treated for COVID, but suddenly all of these really strict protocols around infection control have to be placed around that patient the exact same as if they were in with respiratory distress with COVID.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio as we continue with Justin Senior, CEO of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. What do you anticipate in the coming weeks? And do you think the state should implement a statewide mask order?
You know, I will leave the statewide mask order to other officials. I think that, listen to public health experts. They're going to tell you that masks do make a difference. Even if you were to contract the virus, I think that there's a good chance that wearing a mask would lower the viral load and may decrease the severity of your illness if you were to contract it. I think it's really important that we have a lot of strategies in place that protect people 65 and over who are most vulnerable to this virus, as well as people that are in nursing facilities and assisted living facilities and frail elders who are receiving home health care. That has to be the focus of any strategy, and particularly masking around those folks, and not just wearing any mask, but around those folks, a medical mask or an N95 mask is probably the best way to drive down the fatalities in this particular epidemic. As we look forward, I mean, I think everyone is on eggshells right now. Everyone is hoping that we are cresting right now in terms of the total hospitalization. It's been hovering right around just north or south of 9,000
people your mics are open.
In the hospital with a primary diagnosis of COVID-19 for a little while now. We certainly would like to think that that's the crest of it and that it's going to start to subside. But this virus has been very difficult to predict, so you have to be prepared for something different.
And that was Justin Senior, the head of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida.
Let's go to one more caller here. Final 2 minutes. Daniel, you're the winner here at the final program, final minutes of the program in St. Petersburg. Daniel, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I just want to say thanks again for the show. It's very informative. I just want to talk about the projections. You know, I'm looking a lot at what's going to happen or what's projected to happen based on the numbers right now. And there's some projections that say there's close to, 20,000 people that are going to be dead in Florida by November, and that we're definitely going to go back into some type of lockdown. So I just want to see if there's any input that you guys have on that and what you think might happen based on current projections.
Yeah, it's a good question, Daniel. I spoke with the superintendent of Broward County Schools, the second largest school district in Florida, and I asked him specifically about this idea of having to retreat if they reopen. And he acknowledged, Melissa, that in their reopening planning, he does not think they're going to start, by the way, in a building. He thinks they're going to start online. But he says if they do bring students and teachers back into the classroom, part of their planning now is how do they retreat back all online if they have to, if they see a resurgence, another surge in the cases and the infection rates.
And I think that people watching this and they've seen how this has played out in other places, even other countries. Israel comes to mind. They saw a huge spike when they reopened schools, for example. You certainly have to anticipate that it's at least possible. Although leaving the school issue aside, the governor has said repeatedly that the state is not going to lock down again, even though some public health experts have called for another shutdown. And so we don't have an answer to that caller's question. But what we can promise you is that we will continue to bring you the latest information each week at noon across the state and get the public health experts, the political newsmakers, and others on this program every week so that you can stay current on this pandemic, which affects all of us so critically. So thanks to everyone across the state who weighed in these extraordinary times that we are living through. And that is our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, WLRN's Director of Radio Operations, and our technical director is Peter Mertz. We get engineering help to make sure everything goes off without a hitch from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Alexander Gonzalez answered the phone calls. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Have a happy and safe weekend.
Thanks, guys.